Your brand deserves better than one-size-fits-all branded clothing. Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your team will want to wear, backed by above-and-beyond expertise. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product.
Top of the table, that's exciting. Bottom of the table, that's exciting. Like, that's the sort of football that you want to be. And these are the pressure games that in 15, 20 years' time, I will look back on and I will remember. These are the important matches for me, not the middle of the table teams.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
The Football Show on Off The Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, EFL, Scottish Premiership and much more. Live on Sky Sports.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well, do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now you're welcome back. So we're looking here to talk about a brilliant piece written in the Times just in the past week. Matt Lawton is with us. He wrote the piece. The headline would catch the eye, needless to say. Football violence, cocaine and kids as young as 12, the new face of hooliganism. It's a great piece. It's well worth checking out on the Times website if you haven't read it already. Matt, great to have you on. Thanks for the time.
No problem.
So let's make the very obvious point that anybody can make. Drugs, cocaine use and football, this is a societal problem. We can see this in pubs, nightclubs, walking down the street, homes, any public space you care to mention. So it's not a football problem, and yet this is a problem very much affecting football. Your piece starts with the image of carnage, really. There's a train manager, very upset. She's been comforted by colleagues because what's happened at Nottingham Station, Grimsby Town fans travelling to a game that afternoon, does sound like carnage, frankly.
Yeah, well, it was carnage on that train, for sure. It was so badly trashed that they had to take it out of service. The police went on board the train, the British Transport Police, football police officers, and obviously the train staff, and there was, it was a mess. The train journey is, I think, it's about an hour and three quarters from Grimsby, and there was broken glass everywhere, empty beer bottles, empty drug bags. So they'd been using the drugs on the train. Urine all over the seats. Urine left in empty in bottles. And just such a mess, and actually because of the broken glass, I guess, just unsafe for the train to continue. So the train that I think was supposed to go on to Leicester, I think it was going to Leicester anyway, had to be taken off into the sidings to be cleaned.
Meanwhile, for a number of passengers, there was the very unwelcome sight of police waiting at the train's destination with sniffer dogs on one occasion. And so you write, fans had wolfed down the drugs before pulling into the station because they had been forewarned. An earlier train was not aware of what was awaiting and arrests were made.
Yeah, I assume that in the age of the mobile phone, the first train that arrived with Grimsby fans was a couple of hours earlier, and they were caught by surprise by this sniffer dog operation. One of the things that came out of the Casey report into all that violence that marred the European Championship final Wembley last summer was the fact that a lot of this disorder that occurred then was fueled by cocaine. As you say, look, this isn't just football's problem. It's extremely common across society. You said it yourself. I think, pubs, bars across the land, cocaine is being used. But it makes sense, doesn't it, that it can also fuel disorder if because it will, I guess, it makes these guys feel that little bit more invincible, that little bit more charged up, a little bit more aggressive, perhaps. And it is becoming a problem. And the police's response to that has been to start these random drug searches with dogs. That one in Nottingham that day was the first one they'd done since we did the piece. They were planning to do more, but since we did the piece and we did a couple of films when we when we were there over the weekend, and one of the films that's on Twitter, I think, has been watched 600,000 times or something. Mm. On the back of that, a number of clubs have contacted the Football Police Unit as well to get the same things done there. But to go back to your point, so the first train arrived, they were caught by surprise. As a consequence of that, before they had to pass the sniffer dogs, a lot of fans dumped their drugs on the ground. So actually, once they'd all gone, there were lots of these little bags left on the train platform. The second train, we assume, they were, you know, their mates in the, they go to games with, and alert them to it. So they, rather than discard it on the train platform, they decided to take it on the train.
Mm. This was a Grimsby Town, Notts County match. I mean, we're talking to you from an entirely different vantage point in that we consume English football, obviously, on television. It's not at our train stations at weekends or across public transport. Yeah. So how commonplace is a scene like that, in so much as you can kind of estimate, without having exact figures, but like a Grimsby Town, Notts County match is not making headlines internationally, and yet the scene described there for anybody around the Nottingham Station area, and there's a few people quoted just expressing their disgust at the whole thing, and like, it's insane that this is just so commonplace. How widespread is it across a weekend of trains being trashed and problems like this?
I think it's pretty common because, look, The genesis of this piece was the fact that at the end of last month, the UK Football Policing Unit published these statistics, which were compiled on the back of what happened at Wembley. We saw an issue at Wembley, obviously a serious issue. And they published these statistics, which basically said that since the 1920 season, they didn't compare the 2021 season, obviously, because there was nobody there. But there'd been a huge rise in arrests at football-related arrests, and a huge rise in incidents at football grounds across the top five leagues. You know, so from the Premier League all the way down to the National League, and in particular, there's been a real increase at the lower league clubs. I think partly because the Premier League clubs can afford to pay for the policing, the sufficient policing, whereas the lower league clubs, you know, policing is expensive. And therefore, I think it's fair to say that a lot of clubs, a lot of games are under-policed. But I tell you what's been interesting, Joel, is since we did the piece, a lot of people have contacted us, people that work on the railways, people that travel, regularly on the trains to matches, basically saying, "Thank you for doing this, because this is happening every week." I'm not sure trains are being taken out of service every week, but I think generally people are feeling that if they are unfortunate enough to be on a train with certain groups of fans, it can be a very unpleasant experience.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is, the train that came in the next day, one of the trains that came in the next day that we met for the Nottingham Forest Leicester City game, yes, that train continued on its journey, but people got off that train that they'd shared with Leicester City fans, and they said, you know, we actually quoted one of the police officers in the film, who said it was horrendous, absolutely horrendous. And I just think it's a problem that is, you know, nobody is saying we are back to the bad old days of the sort of 70s, 80s and early 90s. But the sort of messaging from the police is, if we don't do something about this and get a handle on this, that's where we're heading.
Yeah.
We
are at an interesting point, because they certainly, one of the striking images or the more memorable images from the day of the Euro 2020 final, Sky Sports News is filming the, I would say, what started off okay, but very quickly bubbling situation at Trafalgar Square, for instance, and beyond. And even in just random shots, you're seeing, I'd say, several people across the course of an afternoon being caught on camera snorting some kind of white substance in broad daylight. Yeah. Nobody's passing a glance. And again, to emphasise, this isn't an attack on football. I was out for a meal 2-3 months ago, And it just stuck in my head. Dublin City Centre, 7 o'clock on a Saturday night. We were sitting outside because of pandemic, and there was a group maybe 10 feet from us who caught the eye because wearing tuxedos and looking very well heeled and very smart. And like in the middle of the street, the 20 something year old took out some cocaine and snorted it in the middle of the street, and didn't like turn away from the street to face the wall. He just did it. And we're kind of saying, wow. Was this happening 10 years ago? Maybe I was blind to it, but it doesn't feel like that was quite happening 10 years ago. So,
the problem I have is I'm nearly 52 years old, and the height of my social life is going to Pizza Express with the kids. So I don't think it happens very often in Pizza Express.
Yeah.
At least I don't think so. I think it is commonplace. I'm quite a keen cyclist, and lads I cycle with on a Saturday morning, some of them are late 20s, early 30s. And they say to me, it's every work night out, it's going on. Mm. So, they work in industries like, recruitment and accountancy. And I think it is pretty commonplace. And I'm not, crikey, I'm not condoning it. It's all a bit rock and roll for me, but the issue here is the connection with violence, is the fact that it fuels these guys.
Yes.
They're doing it to get themselves charged up to go for it. And the fact of the matter is, the scene at the train station was one thing over that weekend, Joel, but the really shocking bit was actually the hand-to-hand fighting and smashing pubs up in the city centre the next day. Two pubs had their windows smashed in. People were eating their Sunday lunch with their kids, and there were chairs and tables going through the windows.
Yeah,
it was proper violence. And two teams that hadn't played with each other since 2014, and their respective hooligan firms wanted a tear up in the city centre. And Nottingham is it's a nice city, Nottingham. I know it quite well. I went to university just down the road from there, used to go there shopping as a student. I know that is like 30,000 years ago, but it's always been a nice city. But my word, it wasn't a very nice place to be on that Sunday morning, that Sunday lunchtime.
Yeah, there's something so extraordinary in English life about football hooliganism and just normal Sunday lunches happening and families out and about in these same cities and them coexisting. The question I was going to ask for my long rambling point about certainly anecdotally feeling like cocaine is everywhere in a way that it mightn't have been 10, 20, 30 years ago, certainly. The police that you spoke to for this piece, and you did, follow the UK football policing unit for a weekend, which was a fascinating insight. Is it their sense that there are more football fans taking drugs and therefore, it's contributing to the violence than, say, in comparison with 10 years ago and 20 years ago?
Yeah. They've only just started doing these drug search operations, and they're only at the moment compiling this evidence. So they're actually working with some academics. There's a professor at Kent University, and there's also a link with Oxford University, and they're doing a proper academic study about it. They want to actually demonstrate that it is an issue. But no, they certainly believe that to be the case. And the two guys I was with, the way it works in English football is there are dedicated officers that are attached to each club, but then there's two guys, Stuart Dickerson and Wayne Mitchell, who are dedicated national football police officers. And they've both been football officers for 10, 15 years because Stuart was attached to Portsmouth for some years before that. So you have to say that they know what they're talking about, and they are saying that there is a definite rise in it. There's a definite escalation in drug use among football crowds, for sure.
Mm. In your piece, the UK Football Policing Unit, they last month highlighted a dramatic escalation in violence and disorder at or around matches. Arrests are up by 47%. And then the Football League and the National League seen a rise of more than 50% in reported incidents. And you mentioned there the scene at the establishment. I don't want to name them because I'm sure they've had enough bad publicity and they don't want their name dragged through the mud. But you say, you write and you reference it there. It was appalling. Families sat inside trying to enjoy their Sunday lunch. Leicester City fans smashed windows using chair and tables. The pub had been chosen as a venue for a clash of rival fans. No matter that no Forest fans were inside, they attacked the pub anyway. And then you mentioned as well, fighting broke out outside the pub with members of the baby squad among a 100-strong menacing group of Leicester fans being contained by the police. So the baby squad, presumably one of many firms. The concerning point you make as well is these firms, it would be very tempting to think, well, these are on their last legs and there's old men who were in their pomp in the 80s and they're clinging on to the glory days. Really, they are out there recruiting kids as young as maybe 12, 13, 14, getting them in some instances to smuggle drugs through for them.
Yeah, well, that's certainly the view. And I saw with my own eyes just how young some of the people in these groups are. And they are that young. You know, that's, honestly, some of them, they look about 9 stone. You know what I mean? Like, they're tiny little lads, you know. They are that young. I'm trying to think how tall I was about that age. I was probably about, 5'1", 5'2". So they're not big. But yet they're wearing the same uniform. And they're behaving in the same way. Now, look, they're not frontline throwing the punches. And it is depressing when you do see, we sat in the planning meeting at the start of on Sunday morning, and they went through some of the known hooligans, and they call them faces. And they went through some of the individuals. And there's a guy in that group, in that baby squad, who was born in 1960. So your point about being on their last legs is true in some cases, because he is now 62. I'll be surprised if he's still going in 10, 15 years. Fair play to him if he is. But no, it is depressing that these people are, they just haven't matured. They haven't, and you could see that there were guys of that age, of my age. There was a guy that was born in 1970, which is the year I was born, and you're just thinking, good grief, seriously, catch yourself on, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the really alarming bit for me was just how many young lads there are. And, there was a 14-year-old lad punched a police officer in the face at Derby a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
A 12-year-old lad had to be, I'm not sure he was arrested, but officers went and sat down with his mum in the week because he was abusing the police. He was performing pig noises in the face of officers, 12 years old. And one of the officers told us that they'd issued a banning order in Nottinghamshire to a 13-year-old. There was a 15-year-old who they had actually asked to carry their drugs for them because obviously they thought it was less likely that a kid that young would be checked for drugs. And they are being, one of the inspectors that I spoke to, who's in one of the films, talked about, he compared it to grooming, the sort of grooming that they see in organised crime gangs. So it is going on, and it's a real worry. And one of the things that impressed me, actually, about what these football officers do, because it really is community policing. And, it's quite funny to talk about the police doing a good job when, other parts of my own newspaper, they're quite rightly getting heavy criticism, particularly the Met. But these guys are doing a really good job, and they do. They pull out these kids when they see them, and they talk to them. And in some cases, they do take their details when they work out that they're on their own, and they will go and see their mum and dad in the week, and basically say, "Did you even realise that your kid was in Nottingham at the weekend? Mm. Did you realise he was hanging out with a load of real unpleasant 40 and 50-year-olds?" Guys doing cocaine, guys, throwing bits of furniture through windows, guys fighting in the streets with rival fans. Did you realise that your son is travelling around with these guys? Sometimes, and as the police said, sometimes they don't realise. They think their son's gone around to his mate's house for the day, but they're actually jumping on trains and they're going to football. Depressingly, some do realise, and the police say that sometimes you hit a brick wall with the parents, they don't care.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's for me, I was most struck by that. You know, I've been... I know when we cover football as journalists, you know, we go through a different door and we often drive to the ground, and we may not be arriving at Nottingham Station at 10 o'clock in the morning for a 3 o'clock kickoff. So we don't see these things often. Like, I was at Wembley that day, and I have seen a lot of violence and disorder over the years of football. You know, it's not exclusively English problem, Joel, but it is definitely an English problem. And you know, I've been following England for 20 years now, well, more than 20 years, going back to Euro 2000. And even only a few years ago, I can't quite think which year it was, but England played Seville in 1 October in a friendly. Played Spain in Seville. And I always remember, and this was only sort of 4 or 5 years ago, and went out for dinner with a few colleagues, came out of the restaurant 10 o'clock at night, beautiful evening, 70 degrees, you know, October, still lovely and warm, families walking around, mums and dads pushing kids in prams, you know, just this lovely scenes, you know, lovely big squares with palm trees and so on. And then we went round a corner and suddenly there must have been 200-300 England fans, shirts off, blood everywhere, riot police, chairs being thrown, bottles being thrown. It was a national embarrassment, you know. And unfortunately, there is still an element in football. The worry here is that element at club football is starting to grow again.
Starting to grow again, yeah. That's the key point. And when was that Seville example, by the way? Was that recent or going back a while?
It's not that long ago.
Okay.
I would say, I'm going to guess 2016, 2015. Okay.
My sense, you guys, you'll never eliminate this. It's too embedded in the culture. But my sense was that you'd got on top of it to a fair degree. It's never going to be perfect, but to a fair degree, to the point where it seemed like the intelligence was such as to prevent a lot of the main protagonists from travelling to major events. You know, you think of the water cannons of the French World Cup in 98, that those days weren't fully gone and there were going to be isolated incidents for sure, but that you got on top of it to an extent. And again, almost the gentrification of football and the pricing and all-seated stadiums, that, you know, football matches have become family events and very family-friendly, certainly at Premier League level. So it's quite interesting to place your story into where I thought we were.
I definitely think that football made an enormous amount of progress. And you're right, much more of a family affair. I took my elder kids to United a few years ago because it's my nearest Premier League team to where I live. And I had absolutely no concerns about that. As it was, two girls, I'm not saying girls, but my girls just weren't into it. You know, they didn't buy it. They didn't get the bug. But I had no concerns about taking them. And it was, I think they were a tenner each, you know, to take them. And we sat in the family end. They quite enjoyed it. They quite enjoyed it. It was United versus Middlesbrough. And I think the bit they actually most enjoyed was the family stand then was right next to the away fans. And they just loved all the swearing. They just thought it was hilarious. Mm. But you didn't feel any danger. But it wasn't that long ago. It was only in the last year, I'm sure. I'm sure I'm right in saying this, Joel, that there were Leeds and Man United fans fighting in the streets of Manchester.
Mm.
So that, you know, it has come back. I do think there is an issue with COVID. I think some of these people who've gone slightly bonkers coming out of lockdown. It was a very interesting point that prior to this weekend in Nottingham, I did a piece with Mark Roberts, who's the head of football policing in the UK. He's the chief constable for Cheshire. So he's a very senior police officer. And I did a piece with him and he made the point, and this wasn't exclusive to football, this was just generally what they were seeing, was that there is a generation of 18, 19-year-olds who have been locked up for the last couple of years in the sense that we all grew up and we all started, you know, and I've said this before in the last few days, but, you know, we would have all started to sneak into pubs and bars when we were maybe 16.
Yeah.
When we were maybe tall enough to get served, and you'd be chuffed to bits that you managed to get a beer, and then you'd quietly sit in the corner and try not to draw too much attention to yourself. A certain generation of kids have missed out on that in a way. Mm. They haven't been able to go out in the same way for the last couple of years. So that kind of education, that kind of coming of age that everyone else has had, they haven't had. And what he said is that you just see, and this isn't true of everybody, of course it isn't. Yeah, there's lots of perfectly well-behaved, respectful 18, 19-year-olds out there. But the police are just finding generally that there are problems with that age group every weekend.
Okay.
Because they've just missed out on a crucial part of their development.
It's interesting. I guess the problem for football is, in percentage terms, it takes a fairly small percentage to trash a train, to destroy Sunday lunch in a city centre, to fight in the streets, and for it to be very eye-catching. And how that's eliminated, I don't know. The concern might be, having read your piece, that we could be heading back to some darker days on a grander scale. Is it the contention of the police, in so much as they can tell, that the membership amongst firms, for instance, who are arranging to go and cause trouble in a very deliberate way, is that membership booming and growing? Is that their feeling?
They didn't say that precisely, but they did say that they are aware that, as I say, that there is a younger group joining that is starting to hang out with these guys.
Okay.
So in that sense, it is growing. Specifically, firms, I don't actually know really how they measure that membership. I know they do. That, you know, they do, I guess they have moles, you know what I mean? Like, they do get fed information. They, you know, they had intelligence on that Sunday morning that there was going to be a renewing of hostilities between those two groups, between the Forest Executive crew and the Leicester Baby Squad. Like, moronic names, aren't they? So they were aware of that, but they didn't have sufficient intel to know where they were going to meet, because that was part of the issue, was that there was a lot of officers that the football officers, you know, understandably targeted the trains, but actually the guys that did know who they were looking out for became aware very quickly that they weren't on any of the trains, and it was literally within minutes that they suddenly got the call to say that fighting had broken out in the city centre. And when we got there, they could see that the guys they'd been looking for at the train station were indeed in this group. So it does seem like there is a generation that does want to extend the lives of these firms.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, Joel, you know, we go to England games and people are singing No Surrender who weren't even born before the Good Friday Agreement.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, it's idiotic.
Yes. No, you'd get a laugh, I suspect, at a quiz in them on their Northern Irish politics, I'm sure. And so would pretty much all clubs, by the way, Matt, because I'm not, you know, this is kind of, it's not entirely alien culture, but I don't have a feel for it in the truest sense. Would pretty much all clubs in the Premier League and beyond have firms associated with them? Or is it a particular concentration of the country or certain divisions, or is it random?
I couldn't tell you if all 90 odd clubs do, but I think a lot do, yeah. Mm. I think most do. And the fact of the matter is that there was almost one of the points that the police were making to me because I approached them and I said, look, I've got an idea. You've published these statistics. Can I see it for myself?
Yeah.
You know, so can I come along? And they chose those two games, partly because they knew that they were going to be problematic. And it was for that reason that the two national police officers were, you know, one went on the Saturday, one went on the Sunday. And they're at games all the time, those two guys.
Okay.
But they also just wanted to demonstrate to me that it's not just the Premier League, but it is actually down in the National League, you know, little Grimsby. Who'd have thought they'd have had a problem?
Yeah.
And I was talking to Simon Jordan about this, who, you know, who is has a valid perspective as a former football club owner and dealt with the police and paid the police bills when he was an owner at Crystal Palace. Mm. And he made the point, yeah, but, you know, it's a minority. But I then made the point, yeah, but... So at Meadow Lane that day, there were say, 2,500 Grimsby fans, yeah? Mm. In one end. But if 100 or 200 of them are really unpleasant, that's actually an unpleasant place to be. You know, it is like that. And I've said this before. It is like walking into a bar and there's one table in the corner where they're being really rowdy and unpleasant. Now, the thing is, the difference is for a football fan compared to someone that walks into that bar, you can just think, you know, no, I'm not staying in. Let's go somewhere else. But if you want to watch your football team, you haven't got a choice. You're in the away end. You're with them. And it can be really, really unpleasant. The fact of the matter is, you know, when they got that late free kick, the fans were singing that they were going to storm the pitch if they scored. They did score. They tried to storm the pitch. They swamped this area, as I said in the piece, that was occupied by the disabled fans, you know, fans in wheelchairs, which must have been horrendous for them. I was stood only, I don't know, 20 yards away. The stewards who are paid whatever they're paid, £10 an hour, are the barrier between these guys and the pitch. And the next thing you know, there's a woman being led past me who was in her 50s or 60s, I would guess, who had a broken nose.
Right.
You know, she's there as a steward earning 10 quid an hour. The next thing, she's being led off by St John Ambulance because she's got a broken nose.
Right.
You know, and that's just not acceptable. And the one positive I would say is that the football authorities have woken up to this. The police, they're listening to the police. Obviously, Wembley last year was shocking. You know, I must confess, I didn't know people tailgated. I'd never heard this tailgating thing where people squeeze through turnstiles. I've seen it on the tube in London, but I didn't know it was so common in football. And that's continuing. A colleague of mine went to the Arsenal-Liverpool League Cup game the other week, and people were tailgating to get in there, into that semi-final.
Mm.
So it's still happening. It's a common tactic to illegally gain entry to a ground.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Look, it's an issue.
Yeah, I guess we watch the space and see where it goes. I mean, it would be so grim if it went backwards after so much progress. There is just something so intrinsic in football and this culture, and it is the place where you go in the stands and you take out all your pent-up frustrations of life on the players and the things you say that you would never say otherwise, and you bet, yeah. You know, there's an anonymity and how you can believe. And then one step further, we just have this cohort who take out their frustrations by getting drugged up, getting drunk and smashing things to pieces and fighting, and it's just in society, that frustration, and football is definitely an acceptable sphere where like-minded types get together and say, right, let's cause havoc for a few hours. And I mean, there's various motivations, I'm sure, but it's just a pent-up frustration, pent-up anger, pent-up fecklessness, I don't know what. And I don't think football will ever shake it, you know?
It's I was talking to a couple of WPCs and I said, chatting to one of them, and I said, do you enjoy this? And because I must confess, when I was in that van, I was thinking, poor blimey, this could be a bit lively.
Yeah.
I was, and there were a couple of moments when we actually got caught, myself and the cameraman, and I'm not trying to compare myself to some kind of war correspondent here, because I think they do generally, you know, put their lives at risk, and I've got nothing but admiration for journalists that do that kind of work. But we did, we made a slightly bad decision, and suddenly got caught between, it's in the film, but it doesn't look that hairy in the film, but it was a little bit concerning, because we got caught between police holding back a load of Forest fans and then the police holding back the Leicester fans. And I was looking at this line of officers thinking, good grief, if that line breaks,
Alex and I are right in the middle of this. But anyway, it didn't. The police were brilliant. But now, but I was talking to this WPC and I said, you know, did you enjoy it? And she said, I find it fascinating. She said, what I find fascinating is sometimes when you arrest these guys and you talk to them, they actually lead very normal lives.
There's a fight club quality to it.
Yeah, they've got wives, they've got kids, they've got decent jobs. But on a Saturday, they go bananas.
Yeah.
And I know we've seen that before. You know, there's that, I can't think of the name of the film, but there's that Gary Oldman film, which is, you know, which I thought really summed it up for me, the old style of hooliganism. But they still see that. And I guess the officers, they do find that interesting. Mm. That brush with those kind of people that you just, I'm sure their colleagues, their families wouldn't believe that they could undergo that kind of transformation on a Saturday, but they do.
I guess society has a constraining effect on humanity, and we all need our releases. It's just, you know, trashing a Leicester pub when there's some kids trying to have Sunday dinner is an odd way of doing it, but there we are. Matt Lawton, people should read the piece, I think, is the point here. It's on the Times website and they'll catch the video as well. Thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Cheers. Matt Lawton there with us. The Times, and our football coverage is brought to you by Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.